This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another edition of the Inch Podcast. This podcast recorded Wednesday, January 11th, 2012. My name is Joe Vedashevsky, Inch senior writer covering ECAC hockey, and pleased to welcome in a full cast for tonight's podcast. Five of us will be sharing our hockey ideas over the next hour plus, usually. First of all, I guess we'll start with CCHA writer James V. Dowd. Hello, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. How are you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good. Also, Hockey East senior writer Kevin Zeiss. Hello, Kevin.
Gladdy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good.
Good.
And Inch editor Mike Idlebus. Hi, boss.
Hello, everyone. I lost my special guest status over the break, so.
You got a promotion.
I'm in the cast now.
Yeah.
I got a chair with my name on the back, one of those little director chairs.
Good job.
It's pretty sweet.
Did Santa bring that?
No. Hmm. The production company that owns Inch sent them out. You didn't get yours?
No.
Oh, well.
I'll talk to the people.
Yeah.
And WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Hi, guys. With five of us on the podcast, we're each going to get about 20 seconds. So, hi and goodbye.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks for listening to the Inch Pod. All right, let's send it around the horn a little bit, as we usually do. We'll start with it's been about a month since we've done one of these podcasts, so we'll get to a lot of stuff. We'll take a look at some of the things that are going on in each league, some of the other issues that are popping up more nationally, and also touch on World Junior, a couple other things to get to. So there's a lot to talk about. I guess we'll go around the horn to start with, and might as well work east to west a little bit here, and we'll start with Kevin. Kevin, I guess anything that we've seen in the last month or so that may have changed or may have echoed or verified your mid-season report in Hockey East. What do you see shaping up as we head into the full second half?
Things, to be honest, Hockey East is looking to me a little bit like a lot of the leagues that you're going to see around the country, where you're going to have a couple teams at the top of the table, and then everybody's pretty interchangeable from there on out. BU and BC are at the top right now, and having seen those two in action a couple times on TV and a couple times live myself, I don't see any reason to assume that those two clubs are going to go anywhere. But in looking at the standings right now, I mean, you've got a total of 5 points separating first and fifth place, which in Hockey East is a big deal between home ice and the first round and being on the road in that first game. But then the bottom half of the standings as well, you're looking at 4 points separating fifth and ninth. So a good weekend can either jump you from being out of the playoffs altogether or, you know, potentially even being threatening for home ice. Yeah. So that's, as we've seen, and again, like I said, it's something that's you're going to hear a lot probably throughout this podcast, but on any given night, any team's capable of beating each other. Some of the results that you see kind of make you scratch your head, but when you step back and look at the whole big picture of it, it's just like most of the other leagues. It's a very balanced league from top to bottom.
That is the case, and I am sure, as you said, we'll hear more of that. Is BC the best almost by default at this time?
I don't think it's by default. I think they've been the team that's been the most consistent without question. BU has had their ups and downs in the first half, and that was one of the points brought up in our midseason review was, you know, this is a club that can beat the best teams in the country on one night, and then on the next night you've got a head-scratching result in their loss to Holy Cross.
Right.
So, you know, Merrimack started out great and then cooled off. You've got a team, actually probably the hottest team right now is Northeastern. And, you know, when they started off with one win out of their first, I think it was 10 games, You know, it's a hole to climb out of, but they're back in the thick of things right now as well. So I wouldn't say necessarily they're the best by default. I think that the league is deep, but I think that they've been the most consistent, and I probably would give them that moving forward, that that I would look for them to claim the league's regular season title by the time it's all said and done.
Of these three teams, well, you know, maybe of these two teams, Merrimack, UMass Lowell, which has a better chance of winning the Hockey East tournament at the end of the year?
Ooh, I mean, thanks for putting me on the spot there.
I mean, I'm seeing some similarities there. I think Lowell can score more than Merrimack, but they both got good goaltending, some senior leaders at the top, and then some underclassmen contributing. Both teams, Merrimack's cooled off a little bit, but Lowell's on quite a run here with two losses in their last about 12 games. So,
and I was going to say, I think Lowell is probably sitting in a better position as well. Merrimack had the easier of the two schedules in the first half of the season. Lowell obviously had a very difficult stretch. And Lowell also happens to have, you know, three games in hand on the leaders in BU and BC, sitting 5 points back with three games in hand. You know, they go 3-0 out of those three games, and they're leading the standings right now. So my guess is that I would probably give that to Lowell at this point, but it's a pretty slim margin between those teams.
Gotcha.
If you look at Lowell's schedule from here on out, starting this this weekend, they're at Vermont. They've got a home and home with Northeastern. They still have three games left with Merrimack, and they've got a home and home with BU, and that's really going to be their toughest games from here on out, or at least
They've already played BC three times.
They're done with BC. Yep. They don't play New Hampshire.
They've gone to Maine already, so
and they've gone to Maine.
And I think you look at Merrimack; they've still got, you know, two games left with BC. They've got a game left with BU, a couple with you with New Hampshire. You know, so they've definitely got a much more difficult road ahead of them than Lowell does.
Yeah,
you know, the other funny thing about Hockey East, and I didn't really even realize it until just a few minutes ago. You know, we've really been impressed with Northeastern over the last, you know, month or two, and they're tied for eighth in that league. I mean, that's, you know, they absolutely demolished Notre Dame, and they ended up sweeping them. They went to Minnesota and won.
Beat Michigan,
and now they're 4-7-2 in their league.
Well, they started slowly, and they were all league games. I mean, that didn't help things. And back to Lowell real quick. The note I put in the power rankings this week is, you know, they've got five games in 9 nights coming up here after this Vermont trip this weekend. So all those games in hand will be made up generally in that stretch. So we'll get a better idea. And it's against, you know, Northeastern, Providence, and UMass, so they've got an opportunity to make up some ground there.
Yeah.
Any other things that you're keeping an eye on? I thought you did a great check-in with Boston University regarding their roster turnover and how they are approaching things after that. That Notre Dame trip on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I thought that in talking with Coach Parker and their captain, Chris Connolly, after the game there on New Year's Eve, I got a feeling from both of them that, you know, obviously those are two big players that they're losing, but I didn't get the sense from the club in general, even after coming off of a loss against the Irish there, that they were in any sort of panic mode. You know, they both kind of had this opinion of, you know, we've got a good squad here. We've got good players, and they're going to have to find a different role. I think that's sort of the unique challenge that they have, is that most of the teams by now, their players have figured out their roles. And I think that sets them back a little bit. a little bit of a disadvantage, but I don't get the sense that that team is necessarily going to go anywhere. I thought, they looked as though they it's going to take them maybe a week or two, but I think BU will be fine.
Yeah, they're going to need to get a little more out of their younger players, but that's what second semester is for. You get through those first 20 games, and then you're not really a freshman anymore. So
exactly.
So that's a final note on Hockey East. That really has been a league of streaks.
Yeah.
As far as teams, different teams getting hot at different times. You know, BC was hot early, Merrimack was hot early, and now you're seeing Maine, now you're seeing Lowell, now you're seeing Northeastern, BU. It's definitely going to be interesting to watch that play out. You know, is any team really going to develop some consistency, or is it just going to be whichever team gets hot at the right time that's going to end up winning the league or winning the regular season title or winning the playoff?
And that's one thing where I can definitely see a surprise Hockey East champion. Simply because of, like you mentioned, you could see a team getting hot at the very last minute there and going on a run through the tournament. So, it's definitely going to be very interesting watching the second half, especially now that the first half of the season, there were only two weekends or two weekend dates, I believe it was, that had a total of five conference games on that date. So it's been hit or miss with the clubs playing each other on the same nights, and now that we're in the second half of the season, you're going to see a lot more of these five league games on a night type of thing, and you're going to have a little bit more movement coming around as we go through.
I guess I'll keep moving a little bit further west, but stay in region with some ECAC hockey thoughts. And as the first half schedule in that league is tougher than most others because of the late start of the Ivies, which is half the league, and obviously two or three of the very top contenders and this year in Yale and Cornell, what was expected at the beginning of the season, and I've always been high on Harvard all year, but things are starting to shake out a little bit. And maybe the biggest story here is a Yale team whose record is good enough, but we've come to expect so much from them after the last three seasons that to find them at 8-6-1 and, you know, fifth place right now with games in hand in ECAC hockey, you've got, you know, you start to wonder about their status as a contender. And right now, I don't see them as a favorite to win this league, either in the regular season or the postseason. I mean, I was looking at some things, and I asked myself, you know, who are the teams that can win this thing? And I came up with four that were Cornell, Colgate, Union, and Harvard. So we'll see what we get down the stretch. But Union's a team to keep an eye on. I'll have more on them in my notebook this week. But they've got they've got six ties, so their record doesn't look as good as it might be. But they're plus 28 in goal differential, you know, in their 21 games. So there's something there, and they drilled Dartmouth last Saturday. That game was televised regionally, and looked for the first time I think all year looked like the team that was in the top 10 for most of last season. You know, you lose your senior class, you lose a goalie, Keith Kincaid, to pro hockey as an underclassman, and you lose your head coach to Providence, but there was enough pieces back and some stability in the coaching staff with Rick Bennett taking over. He was an associate head coach before Lehman's departure, and now he's the head coach of that program. So I think this Union team is kind of poised to make a run here. And something that people don't talk about is Union's defensive record, which is really pretty tremendous this season. Their power play garners most of the headlines, and they've scored some a significant amount of goals. But they're number one in the country in scoring defense, 41 goals in 21 games. only 1.95 goals against per game, and that's number one in the nation. So,
well, and one thing you mentioned with them a day or two ago, I think, was, you know, they really got a backloaded schedule as far as home games.
Yeah, they only played five home games in their first 19 games.
And they didn't take the easy way out during the first half of the season. Hmm. You know, if you look at their schedule, you know, especially, you know, obviously non-conference wise, because they have so many non-conference games to fill with the Ivies starting a full month later. You know, they went to Denver, they went to CC.
Played Western twice.
Played Western twice. They went to Merrimack.
New Hampshire, at Michigan.
Played Michigan. You know, so they're. I mean, they didn't take it easy, and sure, that record could look a little bit better, but, you know, given who they played, it could be a heck of a lot worse too.
Yeah, that Michigan win was good for their confidence. I mean, this Michigan team might not be at the, you know, level of even last year's team that was playing on the last night of the season, but. To go to Yost and win for a team like Union, a program that hasn't had sustained success in the national picture, that's a big win for that team. I think they would have liked some better results out of that Denver CC trip at New Year's Eve, but they're back at it, and they've got a fun weekend. They've got you know, they're at Fenway. We'll get to outdoor hockey a little later on. They're at Fenway Park against Harvard on Friday, and then Saturday night they're back home against RPI, who's struggling, but it's a huge rivalry game in this league when Union and RPI get together. So that's that. Also got to see Colgate in person. That's a good team. They'll be in the mix the whole second half. And maybe it's a little bit of a case of the things that didn't go right for them last year are going right for them this year in terms of close games and bounces and production and goaltending has really been much better for them. So I think that's a good club right there, that Colgate team.
What about Cornell? I mean, I haven't been able to get a read on them, and you know, they haven't played a ton of games, obviously, but it seems like they're a little bit of the Cornell of old, where they're just shutting people down.
They have, especially at home, been able to keep teams off the scoreboard. They're getting more production from this freshman class than any I can remember. It's a talented group, and I talked to one coach who said that he thinks they have the best freshman class in the country. You know. Even with the likes of Miami and Denver and places like that. But they're getting a lot of production from younger guys. I think their key, I mean, Andy Isles is going to give them great goaltending. Their key is to be able to sustain the offensive production as games get tighter in the second half of the season. You know, how will the new players, how will the freshmen respond to that? And I think their defense... Their top 6D that, you know, at this point tend to take some more chances than their D in the past. And it's really been beneficial for a guy like Nick D'Agostino, who's among the team's leading scorers. But, you know, if he starts running around a little bit too much, and, you know, you've got a freshman, Joakim Ryan, who's terrific, but also, you know, tends to be more on the offensive side. Kirill Godovets has been in and out of the line, has that kind of flair. They're gonna have to get some stability back there, and you know, that's where a guy like Braden Birch comes in and is so valuable to that team. So if they can keep those guys under wraps and then respond through the second half of the season, they'll be fine. And I love the leadership they're getting from Kira Ross. I mentioned that in my midseason report. Good player. So. That's what I got there. I really don't think anybody else is really poised to make that move. I mean, Quinnipiac could give somebody some problems in the first round of the playoffs or even the second round, but I just don't think they have much there. Yale, we mentioned, not really sure what you're going to get, but St. Lawrence, Clarkson, RPI, Brown, Princeton – Dartmouth. Not buying it. So that's where we stand there.
Gladdy, would you say it's fair to say that ECAC hockey is probably one of the few leagues that is separated into tiers more so than any other? As you mentioned, you've got those four teams that you could possibly see winning it, and then kind of a middle tier and then a bottom tier, or
I almost think it's two right now.
Okay.
I think it's the four that I mentioned. I think Yale could go either way from where they are right now. And then I'm just not seeing much there from the other six or seven teams. So
would you put Harvard in that middle group with Yale?
No, I've got them in the top four.
Oh, I think they're real good. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're real good. And then, I mean, the two question marks to me are Yale, which I'm a little more bullish on, and then Quinnipiac, which is a little intriguing. And then after that, I'm not seeing too much there. But, you know, at this time last year, you know, Harvard and Colgate were dead last, and both did some nice things throughout February. So there's time to make that adjustment or make that leap. So opportunities there. But at this point in the season, that's what I'm seeing. So CCHA, I'm going to make a point, and Bus can talk on this a little bit, and then Dowd will get your take. You know, as we talk to you guys and writers and read other things throughout the week, we put together the Inch Power Rankings every Sunday night, and Bus and I kind of put the finishing touches on those. We had eight teams that we considered from the CCHA to list in our top 20 or on the bubble or to move out of the rankings. None of those were Northern Michigan. What's the story there?
Wow, what's the story?
Well, I mean, and you know, looking at NCAA tournament criteria, and they're rate very highly in that regard.
But well, yeah,
they're getting votes in the USA Today poll. They're 20th maybe in the USCHO poll. I mean, this is a team that's not carrying much national cachet, and here they are as a two seed, and, you know, if the tournament bracket were to be announced tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, and obviously that's kind of where this whole discussion comes from, is not only the power rankings, and, you know, it's not just that we didn't put them in the power rankings. We really didn't even bring them up.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're three games over 500 overall. They're 500 in the league. They've got some decent wins. They've got some okay. You know, here's the story about Northern Michigan. I mean, first of all, they've been pretty good lately. I think they've got one loss in their last eight or nine games, something like that.
7-1-1. Yeah.
You know, and they've got, or I'm told they play the toughest schedule in the country. So,
yeah, I don't know about that.
But when you look at their wins and you look at their losses, they haven't. You know, all the teams they've beaten are, I would say,
middling,
average to,
yeah,
okay, and all the teams that they've lost to are average to
good,
and I think that's where they're getting their boost. I mean, at some point they're going to have to win some games because I don't think that just having a tough schedule and playing, you know, a little better than 500 hockey is going to be enough to carry them.
Yeah, they have 10 wins in 21 games.
So, I mean, I think they're really benefiting from being slightly better than average against a schedule that is, when you look at it, I wouldn't call it, you know, I guess statistically, it is the toughest in the nation, but it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't seem to be a grueling schedule, but it's not a terrible schedule either. You know, there's nobody really in there that'll drag you down.
Right.
You know what though? They had one grueling part of it where they went to Western, they played Notre Dame, they went to Ohio State. And they got swept at Western, they tied two games at Notre Dame, and they got swept at Ohio State.
Yeah, they had zero
wins.
One
grueling part of their schedule.
Right.
And
now you know what, though? They don't play a really tough schedule in the second half.
Yeah.
So, you know, they it's there for their taking. If they go out and they win these games like they should, if they're as good as some people are purporting and some of the rankings are purporting, then, you know, they'll be there if they win these next, you know, 10, 12 games. But
yeah. Well, 9 of their next 11 are on the road, and only one of those at Michigan Tech is up on the UP. It's not like the road trips to Lake State. These are
They're a much different team on the road.
Yeah. So
they're 8-1-4 at home. They're 2-6. Listen to this. They're 2-6-0 on the road, and they've scored 16 goals on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't good. In 8 games, 16 goals.
Well, they haven't been shut out on the road. They haven't been shut out at all this year.
They haven't been shut out at all.
That's pretty good.
So I don't. I mean, they play Michigan State this weekend. Michigan State's in a little bit of a tailspin, you know. And I think we kind of speculated, you know, before Christmas that thing was going to even out, probably.
Right.
Miami looks like they're better.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan Tech, who knows? You know, that's a coin flip for me. Ferris, you know, Ferris looked like they were.
They looked great early, and then they kind of went away.
And then they sweep Colgate. So,
yeah.
At Bowling Green, at Michigan, and Lake Superior. And that's their schedule. So,
Dowd, what else going on in that league? What are you seeing? What's your vibe right now?
Bust. You touched on it very briefly there, but I'm watching Miami right now. You know, I think we all really like them heading into the season, and, you know, it goes without saying for anybody who's versed in the game, things didn't start off the way that they hoped there. You know, I think they split with Colgate, and then they got swept in consecutive weekends by Ferris State and Lake Superior, and then things really started to change for them. At that point, they were 0-4 in the league, 2-6 overall. And then, you know, they reeled off a bunch of wins, you know, again, I guess they, you know, they beat and tied Michigan, they beat Denver, you know, they beat Ohio State or split with Ohio State. So they've had some decent wins in there too. And I think things are really coming together for them. And, right now, Ohio State, it's not a stranglehold's a little strong, but they've got a, you know, a pretty big lead, a 10-point lead at this point, over Miami with respect to the CCAJ title. But that's a team that you know will be well coached. I think the goaltending was a problem for them earlier. That's really coming together. Connor Knapp in particular this past weekend. So I'm watching them. And, you know, I'm also watching Michigan. They looked like a team that maybe would break that streak of NCAA tournament appearances, but had a chance to watch them in person at the GLI. And, you know, Boston College is what it, you know, they are what they are, but they're a decent team. And, you know, I saw Michigan maybe look a little more mature with so many young players and young faces out there than they did. There was a stretch in that Boston College game where BC really took over. And, you know, even my dad, who doesn't know a whole lot about college hockey or these teams and players in particular, he said, oh, this doesn't look good. You know, it's, you know, Michigan missed their chances, and this looks like all of a sudden it can go from, you know, a lead to a 5-2 or 6-2 loss. And then, you know, Michigan leveled off and showed some maturity that maybe we didn't know was there before. So I don't know that they're a player in the title race, but it'll be interesting to see how they are. And then I'm curious to see if Ohio State can hold on. You know, that's the first time, you know, they were the first CCHA champion. regular season champion, and they haven't won one since. And so it'll just be interesting to see how that team handles the pressure. Obviously a different coaching staff in the past. But I guess there's a lot to watch here. It's whether the traditional powerhouses can come back and whether the potential new powerhouse can hold on.
Another point to bring up, and I mentioned this Sunday night when we were doing power rankings, as we started talking about, I had eight teams on my sheet from the CCHA to consider. The first point was that Northern Michigan wasn't one of them. And the second one is, all of those eight teams, there's only one that I could realistically, you know, consider as a legitimate threat to make the Frozen Four, and that's Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, you know, Notre Dame is, you know, they're a really strong team, and if anybody's going to challenge Ohio State here, it's going to be them. They kind of had a rough, you know, a rough stretch there between Thanksgiving and the last weekend of the first half, but you know, they closed out the first half with a win against Ferris State after losing on the road, and then they beat BU, and they've beaten Minnesota since then. So It looks like they're back on track, and that was just a hiccup along the road. So I wouldn't disagree with you that they're a contender.
Summerhays is kind of the difference there, Buzz, huh?
What's that?
Summerhays seems to be making a difference.
Yeah, I said this to a few people who follow Notre Dame hockey, and you know, I saw most of the BU game and all of the Minnesota game. I mean, Notre Dame should have had about eight goals against Minnesota. They must have hit at least four pipes. But you know, if Summerhays is going to play like he did against Minnesota, and for that matter against Boston University, I mean, he was good against Boston University. And he was good against Ferris in their last game before the break. You know, he's only given up. I think it's
five goals in three games.
Yeah, something like that. His goals against is two, basically in his last three starts, and his save percentage is about .930. So I think, you know, we've said consistently, I think since the end of last season, really, that if they get any goaltending at all, they're going to be tough. And now it looks like they're getting it. And the other thing that they're getting is that Riley Sheahan has been over the last, well, especially in the Minnesota game, but you know, really all season long has played like a first round draft pick, which he was back in 2010. You know, he's been a real difference maker. He was by far the best player on the ice when they beat Minnesota, and he was just a terror. And if they can get him going, keep him going, get Austin Lee going, who slowed down there, or Anders Lee, I should say, you know, he kind of slowed down. And then keep Tynan playing at the level that he's playing at. They've got a good group of defensemen who bring varying degrees of different talents to the lineup. And I think they've got some depth at forward that is really underrated. You know, this team's primed for some big things, I think.
Well, hey, I mean, that's we said at the beginning, and then looking at the midseason review, that's exactly what we said. Deep group experience, versatile defensemen, excellent group of forwards that can score goals and make plays, but it's the goaltending that's let them down, I think. So, you know, if Summerhays can be consistent, I think consistency is a big thing because we've seen stretches where he's looked great, we've seen stretches where Johnson's looked great, but nobody's really done it over the course of, 10, 12, 14 games, and they're going to need that out of Summerhays, or if it comes to it, Johnson.
Yeah, I think Summerhays is, you know, I got a feeling we'll see some more of Johnson down the stretch. You know, he's going to get some starts, but I think, you know, if I had to choose, I think I'd hitch the wagon to Summerhays and take my chances with him because he's been pretty good.
Yeah. Any last call thoughts on CCHA?
There's a league that's a league with no tiering whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe Notre Dame and then some stuff.
There's a tier. It's called meh.
It's called all. It's catch all. I mean, I think Ohio State is pretty good. I mean, they're getting great goaltending.
That'll help.
They are.
You know, when you're giving up two goals a game, you got a chance to win every night.
Well, there you go. All right, let's keep moving west. WCHA time. Defending national champions are atop all of the national polls, all of the metric rankings that seem to go on around college hockey, and technically would not be the number one seed if the league playoffs were starting today. Minnesota Duluth dropped some early games to Minnesota, but really have been on a roll. Jess, where do the Bulldogs stand right now? I can't remember them being this good and this efficient, even including last year's somewhat surprising national title.
Right. You know, that's been the most impressive thing about this run that they've been on since the middle of October is just the confidence they're playing with. I mean, that, you know, when, the last time I saw them play in person was when they were 1-3 overall. And, you know, Scott Sandelin just said, hey, we're fine. You know, we're outplaying teams. We're not beating teams right now, but this is a good team. And, you know, and he needed to tweak some things. Kenny Ryder got much better after those first 2 weekends. You look at the three losses in a row that Minnesota Duluth had, they allowed 5 goals in each of those three losses. Since then, they have not allowed more than 3 in a game. So just a really deep and a really confident team. I watched them last Friday, that game against Western Michigan, and man, they're a good team. JT Brown has just incredible wheels and is showing them off again, and they've been fun to watch. But I do like the fact that you pointed out, and it's absolutely true, if the McNaughton Cup were awarded today, it would go to Minneapolis. It would not go to Duluth because they only play the Gophers twice this year. Both games were in Duluth, and the Gophers won both of them.
Yeah. That's a Minnesota team that I think maybe falls into the Hockey East pattern of the season where
right.
Hot real early and then maybe some market correction. But I still think that's a pretty good team out there. What's going to make them an elite team or a Frozen Four contender, or what's going to make them an also-ran?
They've got to, you know, you talk about the Frozen Four, I just think they've got to kind of get their groove back. I mean, they were so strong early in the season, and the defense was so solid, you know, or the goaltending was more solid than the defense. You know, the defense was maybe the weak link, but, you know, those top two lines were clicking, and they were scoring goals and, you know, ranked number one in the country, and justifiably so. You know, since early November, they're now, I think, 6-6 or something like that, and coming off, you know, 2 losses in a row for the first time this season, a really tough game against Northeastern, which they lost 3-2 in the championship of their own tournament. And, you know, the asterisk on that one was, you know, Kyle Rau and Nick Bukestad were not there. They're playing in the World Juniors, and, you know, the Gophers took a lot of penalties that night, and that just doomed them against Northeastern. And then, you know, we talked about Notre Dame a little bit, but the Irish kind of flexed their muscle and showed that they're kind of the alpha dogs. Now, you talked about the midseason stuff that we wrote, and I wrote at that time, and nothing's changed, that this weekend series, the pair at North Dakota, are going to be a huge measuring stick, and I think probably one of the biggest series of the second half for all of this league, because you've got a Minnesota team that's, you know, maybe hitting a wall a little bit, maybe searching for itself a little bit, going up to play a North Dakota team that all of a sudden, like they so often do, seems to have hit its stride. I think North Dakota is 7-1-1 in their last 9 or something like that.
Yeah, and they're missing some key players. I've been impressed with their, persistence or ability to cope with a lineup that isn't what you would have expected if you were drawing out a projected top 18 players at the beginning of the season.
We're talking about North Dakota now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. We've gone in about a decade from, you know, the era where Dean Blaze and some other folks were accused of stockpiling, that they had, you know, all these players that they would give a little bit of scholarship money to, and, you know, they had, you know, 14 extra guys or something like that, ridiculous at one time, or at least that's what they were accused of. I don't know if it was ever a real thing, to now, you know, to the point where some nights they've had 3 walk-ons on their fourth line and just, you know, very uncharacteristic for North Dakota,
yeah,
which is obviously
16 skaters for one game.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this is a place where obviously a lot of kids want to go play, and it shouldn't be as tough to find players as it's been, but the injuries have just piled up. Rocco Grimaldi has not had the impact that anyone expected just because he's been out so much, and very uncharacteristic for North Dakota. And despite all that, now since November 20th, they've got one loss and seem to be really hitting their stride, as they so often do.
Yeah.
A bad tie against Harvard, or at least by their standards, a bad tie against Harvard. They were ahead on that in that game, and I heard a lot of grousing. That put them at 9-8-2 at the time, but bounced back, scored 7 goals on Harvard the next night, and then got the win over Clarkson last weekend up in Winnipeg. So,
yeah.
Interesting series for a team that we don't call by a nickname anymore.
Yeah, they were. I know it sounds ridiculous to say it a little bit, but they were almost fortunate to get out of that Harvard game with a tie.
Yeah.
Harvard was all over him on the third period of that game and rallied from 2-goal deficit. But that's a good team. What do we think on Denver? I'm not seeing much there right now.
No, I spent most of the first half saying, boy, when they get healthy, when they get everybody back, that's a team to look out for. And I still think they're very good. But, if you can't put a full lineup on the ice or if you can't play to your full potential on any given night, you're going to have goofy stuff happen, like what happened last Friday when Alabama Huntsville comes into Denver and gets a 3-2 win. And, put the asterisk up there that, we're not healthy and Jason Zucker was at home in Las Vegas and, this and that and the other thing. But, they're quickly running out of time to kind of put things together here if they're going to contend for a league title.
Yeah. What are the teams we should keep an eye on that maybe people aren't talking about right now?
Well, Nebraska-Omaha is still kind of within striking distance. And that's a good team. I'm interested to see what they'll look like offensively in the second half. And the big thing there is, they dismissed Alex Hudson from the team, who was an inch A to Z guy and was one of their better and more exciting forwards for a lot of years. He was a senior, and they're tight-lipped about what happened, but it was some sort of second violation of team rules, and he's not there anymore. So that's going to be a blow to them offensively. And defensively, they've been shaky in goal, which I didn't expect. I expected a lot more out of John Faulkner, who I think was one of the better goalies in the league last year. And he's been up and down. They've tried a few things. Dean Blaze is notoriously impatient with goalies, he's been quick to pull the hook there. The other team I keep waiting for them to do something, because they've obviously got a lot of talent, but just have not been able to put anything consistent together, is Wisconsin. With a guy like Justin Schultz and Mark Zangerle and, some of the guys they have, to not, to be sitting in 10th place in the WCHA right now, 4 games under 500 in the league at 500 overall, has got to be a huge disappointment.
Yeah. Omaha might have a nice run here of the schedule to build some momentum heading into February or toward the end of the season. I mean, they've got Duluth at home this weekend. That's kind of a proving ground series down in Omaha. Then they've got Mankato, Bemidji State, and Michigan Tech, 2 apiece against those 3 teams, who certainly would lie in the bottom half of the league by all considerations. They can stockpile some points here over the next 3 or 4 weeks and really see where they stack up this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that's a team where you look at where they are in the standings, and granted, we're, halfway through the schedule, but they sweep Minnesota Duluth this weekend. They're 1 point out of first place. So,
yeah.
They're within striking distance. Whether they will be able to put it together and find that consistency that's been so lacking is a huge question. Hey, I was going to ask, James, you saw Michigan Tech more recently than I have. Have the Huskies hit the wall? I mean, they've won 1 of their last 8 or something like that after making a little bit of noise in October and November. What'd you think of them?
I think that maybe they've made the most of what they have on the roster. I really like what Mel Pearson has done to bring a little bit of life to that program, but it's going to take some time, I think, for him to recruit the level of players they're going to need to play the full string of games out. So, yeah, I guess I would agree. I think they've hit the wall.
Okay, interesting. Because there was a lot of hype made about, Mel coaching – as a head coach in his first GLI and facing Michigan State and all of that. I think I mentioned this in my A to Z profile, but the last time they won the GLI, 1981, Mel actually scored the winning goal in the championship game for the Huskies. So amazing to think it's been 30 years since they've won their own tournament.
I guess the one thing I can say from against Michigan State, give Drew Palmisano from Michigan State credit in that game. I think you made 45 saves, if I'm not mistaken, 44, 45 saves. And so Tech was getting the puck on the net, but I think with time we saw some of the positive effect that Mel will have on the program, but there's just not enough talent there, I think, to compete with the upper tier teams in the WCHA.
Yeah. And Joe, you talked about favorable schedules. I mean, if you're following Minnesota Duluth, you've really got to like what they've got coming up in the second half. Obviously, an important series this weekend against Nebraska Omaha, and then beyond that, they only have six road games left after that, and they're at Alaska Anchorage, at Mankato, at St. Cloud. You know, just based on where teams are in the standings, you would think those are six pretty winnable road games, and the rest of everything is at home. So, mm-hmm. You know, a good chance for Scott Sandelin to capture his first McNaughton Cup, you know, which, of course, would spell doom if you want to see the Bulldogs back at the Frozen Four, because, as we know, nobody who wins the Cup ever wins the NCAA tournament.
That curse.
The curse of the Cup.
I'll do some segue here. I want to talk about some Atlantic Hockey clubs and going back to Wisconsin. Schultz put on an unbelievable show against RIT. I watched some of that on TV last weekend. We had a hat trick. And that Wisconsin team, you know, I'm not like you, Jess. I'm a little – I'm not expecting much the rest of the way out. I think they're a little bit away. But that's an RIT team that still is quite feisty and can give teams problems. And where that falls into perspective is, you know, they're right now, I'm pretty sure, fourth in that league. They are. And there's no games in hand. They've all played 13 games. But right now, Mercyhurst is the team that sits atop that league. Air Force, Robert Morris follow, and then RIT's in there. So this is a league that has, you know, maybe some of those CCHA qualities where we don't have a clear front runner, but we've got eight or nine pretty good teams here that can still make a move. And that's a change from what we've seen in the past, where it's predominantly been an Air Force RIT race with maybe another team sneaking in and challenging a little bit. So, good job by the Lakers to get out there. 9-2-2 in the league, nice job for them.
I wanted to give RIT a little credit too. I watched them last weekend against Wisconsin, and they did get swept in Madison. But boy, that's a feisty team. I mean, the Friday night game winds up 6-3, but with 10 minutes left in the third, it's a 4-3 game, and the Tigers are pressuring and. You know, that's a team that's not going to roll over. So, you know, maybe not the depth and the talent that some other teams have, but they worked their butts off.
Yes. I saw them actually went to one of their games last semester. And they're pretty good. They lost that game.
Reminded me a little bit of Bemidji State in that regard. You know, the Beavers are
yeah,
not a
yeah.
super deep, super talented team, but just outwork everybody they play.
Right.
And they're those two are the two most recent surprise Frozen Four entrants. So maybe that tells you something.
They are indeed. And Minnesota Duluth.
True.
But,
no, that's fair.
Bus, Holby, where do you vote now? 1, 2, 3.
Oh man, I'm trying to think back to our last Trackler.
Well, we had seven that we didn't really group, or we grouped them but didn't order them. It's Conley, Austin Smith, Schultz to me right now, in some order, and I think there's a pretty deep drop to number four from there.
I think a lot of that, for me, I guess if I had to vote, I would, I could go along with that right now. I think the guy that jumps out to me, assuming they keep going the way they're going, as of right now, is Cal Heater from Ohio State.
Hmm.
I mean, because who saw Ohio State going from? You know, I think we could have seen them improving from year one to year two under Osiki, but I don't think anybody could have predicted this. And it's pretty clear that he's the guy. Heater is the guy that makes that team go.
Yeah.
I don't know that voters vote that way.
Yeah, I guess it depends if you're more along the most outstanding player or most valuable player camp.
I tend to go when I voted. I tend to go with the if you take player X out of the lineup, where is that team?
Right.
Which is why I can't remember what year. The year that the Frozen was in Boston, I voted for Junior Lessard over Zach Parise. You know, in hindsight, that doesn't look very smart. But at the time, if you took Junior Lessard out of the UMD lineup and you took Zach Parise out of the North Dakota lineup, North Dakota is still pretty good. UMD, not as good. Certainly not a Frozen Four team.
Brandon Bochensky carried the puck a little bit for North Dakota that year.
Yeah. I mean, they had plenty of guys. You know, they had Murray and that's kind of how I looked at it.
Then does that elevate Austin Smith in your eyes?
I think so. Plus, he scores a ton of goals.
20 goals.
And I like goals.
You do.
I like goals.
I do too.
If, as you look right now, Smith and Connolly have the same amount of points. Smith's got 20 goals. Connolly's got 12.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to pick one or the other, I'm going for Smith. Plus, if you take Smith out of Colgate's lineup, you take Connolly out of Duluth's lineup, Duluth's still a pretty good team. Colgate, not quite as good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Anybody else? Hobie, thoughts, points, rebuttals?
I was going to throw Heater out there and bus beat me to it. So,
good job.
If you take Justin Schultz out of Wisconsin's lineup, I'm not sure Wisconsin still has a hockey program.
Yeah, they're watching the Rose Bowl and
jumping around, and they're just super young.
Yeah. Are they getting the right guys? I don't know.
I should mention that Austin Smith also has 5 shorties.
Girlfriends?
Yes, exactly.
All my shorties at the crib.
You flew right up.
All right.
And 5 game winners. Just saying.
Yeah. As good or bad as that stat may be, it still exists.
Yes, it does.
Kevin, is Spencer Abbott maybe the leading Hobie guy out of Hockey East right now? Joe Cannata?
To be honest, I was probably going to go the other direction and look in the goalies. And I think you've got Chris Rawlings and Doug Carr probably. To me, those are the ones that are standing out. Again, going along with Buss's line of thinking of, if you take these guys out of the lineup, where are these teams at? And Maine's got a pretty balanced scoring attack. I mean, they've got Abbott, Flynn, Diamond are 1, 2, and 3 in scoring in the league. So to me, that kind of loses that argument. I would go with the two goaltenders and say, where's Northeastern going to be without Rawlings? Where's Lowell going to be without Carr? To me, I think their numbers are probably comparable to what Heater's been doing. So I would almost look at the goaltender for a Hockey East representative.
Mm. Fair point. Let's get into, as we promised we would, little bit of World Junior Championships banter.
Are you gonna go that, or are you gonna go outdoor hockey?
We can go outdoor hockey, I guess.
Yeah, stay in college. Well,
it's yeah. I guess it's more in line if we were to segue and organize this as the. If there's anything in the world that's organized and chronological and well thought out, it's the rundown and the Inch podcast. So,
it's a flow chart, isn't it?
We've got a cloud. the take that we've kind of come up with and I guess I feel strongly about. Strong enough to mention it in the first shift this week was it seems like a proliferation and an excessive outdoor hockey on the calendar, but not to those kids. You know, for a program like Michigan, who this weekend will play in its fourth in the last 11 years, and there was certainly a long gap after that first one in 2001, but you know, maybe for them it's kind of, you know, been there, done that. But who's to take it away from Vermont and UMass and Maine and New Hampshire, even though Fenway might not have been sold out like it was for an NHL Winter Classic or a BU-BC game? It's still a big deal to those kids. And I think the same will be true for Harvard and Union this weekend and the kids at Northeastern who will get a shot going up against Boston College. I mean, I guess I prefer that element a little bit because they of the four college games that they're having, I mean, of the eight teams participating, only BC has done that before. So I like that aspect of it. Less so maybe with the game at Cleveland, where Michigan's at it again, and Ohio State played in one at Lambeau, right?
Yeah, they were at Lambeau.
Yeah, so you know they've been there, done that, but it hasn't been done in Cleveland. So for that community and the winter festival they put on in the baseball stadium, you know that's a pretty cool idea. So it might seem like a lot to us, and it might seem you know overdone and stale, but for these fan bases, for these cities, for these programs and these kids, good job. Way to go for them.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty vocal about saying that it's too much. You know, we need to, you know, it's lost its novelty, but I guess as long as people are willing to put them on and fans are willing to pay the money to go, what the heck? I mean, I guess I don't have to like it, but as you said, you know, the more people that can experience it, especially, you know, the players, you know, obviously it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for some of them, for the vast majority of them, other than Michigan.
And how many of these kids are going to end up in the situation where, number one, they're in the NHL,
right,
and number two, their team or city is selected to play in this game, and you know,
like Carl
had a 15-year career, yeah. So,
exactly. So,
tell you the places that haven't had outdoor games, you know, that's immediately the question is, hey, when do we get ours? I mean, that's been something in Minnesota for 5 years now.
Yeah.
To the point that before the Gopher Outdoor Stadium was opened a couple years ago, there was even talk of trying to stage a hockey game at the Metrodome, which was mostly pointless in my opinion, but it was just, you know, this whole stadium concept, hey, somebody else did it, we got to do it too.
Hockey games in indoor football stadiums are awesome. I don't know what you're talking about.
I wish I had no idea what you were talking about.
You weren't even there, dude.
No, you're right.
Good job. I'm proud of you.
I had to stay in Minnesota to attend a funeral, and it was probably more fun.
Yeah.
Well, we attended a funeral, too.
Yeah.
The Del Taco was good.
Well, that. Probably didn't need to go twice in the same night, but that's where we were.
Bet you had to go several times the next day.
Oh, no, that stuff. That was the...
Better than that stuff in Ohio you made us eat. Man.
Oh, the Skyline?
That's the worst.
Shout out to Paul Rovnak. His family from Ohio just bought me several cans of Skyline for Christmas. So,
congrats.
I don't have to share any with you.
Thank God.
From one can to another.
Yeah. It's a Festivus miracle. Ohio ties, what's your take?
Skyline is a Southern Ohio thing. Okay. We don't associate with those people.
Those people. All right, that's fair.
If anybody has awesome food suggestions for Tampa, let us know.
Yeah. Cuban.
You should know. You're close enough.
Yeah, you're the one who lives down there.
In the ocean. Okay. I won't deteriorate yet, but some people need to learn some geography.
You're our tropics correspondent. Come on.
I just got to get this out. But so the other day, somebody said on Facebook they're taking a cruise to Grand Cayman, and I was like, well, that sucks. You should take a cruise that comes to St. Thomas. And they then were like, hey, can you meet me on Grand Cayman? And this person happens to live in Florida, and it made me want to say, hey, I think I'm going to go to Dallas for the Michigan-Alabama game in September. You want to meet me there?
Grand
Cayman is like 850 miles away.
Yeah.
Can't you just paddle over?
Yeah, I'll get the kayak out.
Catamaran. Only if he's an infielder.
Doug Woob told a story. Doug Woob told a story similar to that. The first time he took a Gopher hockey team to Anchorage, some friend of a friend had a daughter who was living in Ketchikan, Alaska. So he called her when they got to Anchorage and said, hey, I'll leave a couple tickets for you if you want to come by. And she's like, yeah, that's like 9 hours from here.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to Russia, though, right?
Right.
You can see it.
Deterioration is falling upon us. What?
Nah, get to the World Juniors first.
Yeah, you got to do the World Juniors.
Okay.
This is your beef.
It's not my beef. I mean, let me just, get to a couple things here. Here's the punchline. Usually we do a podcast around the World Junior team, the roster selection schedule and everything. But by the time we had the interest in doing that this year, the United States was already eliminated from medal contention. So we never really got to it. I don't know. Maybe it's prevalent to me because you see so many people who are proud of their country and proud of their hockey team, but a lot of the flag waving, homerism, you know, I understand there's patriotism and goodwill and wanting to see the United States hockey program succeed, but to act like, you know, this is, you know, your tournament and your thing, I mean, it's a little short-sighted. I mean, but they've won World Junior twice, right?
Yes.
Ever. They've won a gold medal in 80 in the Olympics, and yep, they won the World Cup in 96.
And don't forget the Olympics in 60.
Okay. So of the modern era, let's say, you know, you've got the 96 World Cup when Mike Richter was unbelievable out of his mind. You've got the first World Junior when Canada scored on itself to basically give USA the win. And then you've got the next one, and that's over the last 20 years, and how many Olympics, and how many World Cups, and how many World Juniors, and how many World Championships, and, you know, I know the under 18 teams had a lot of success, but you know, I think going in with a little more humility and open mindedness to how good the other countries are is probably a good step rather than hell yeah USA. So.
Well, and don't forget, Gladdy, I mean, this is the U.S. hadn't medaled in back-to-back tournaments ever until the 2010 and 2011 tournaments.
Right.
I mean, that to me, that speaks of the perspective that those were two really, really good years. And, you know, it's not something that you should expect on an annual basis.
Yeah.
There was just and I have to plead ignorance a little bit because I didn't see a lot of the games because I was not at home in the comfort of my...
You're on the road.
I was on the road. I was not in my rumpus room. When they announce the team, there's nothing that really... I mean, I think if you look at it objectively and take off the red, white, and blue colored glasses, I mean, there wasn't really anything to get overly excited about this team, I didn't think. I mean, I think there certainly were some decent players, but, I mean, in terms of difference makers or maybe guys that, you know, you'd see their name and you're like, oh, you know, this kid's going to have a great tournament, so on and so forth. I mean, there were no guys that you really looked at as having the ability to take over games.
Yeah. It's a tough ask because how do you evaluate the team and how do you evaluate their roster? Do you get the best players from a talent standpoint and hope they mesh together, you know, and just hope the chemistry comes? But, you know, if you've got a lot of one-way guys who are used to being the best player on their junior team or the best player on their college team or a high draft pick or a draft eligible who's trying to make a showing in front of the most heavily scouted amateur tournament in the country or in the world, you know, what do you get out of that? And then you throw in a coaching staff that, you know, every year, not just this year, that has otherwise been occupied for the previous 3 months. You know, you go to Lake Placid, then you coach a college team, and then you get the guys back together. So in a short tournament like that, it's hard to put that all together. But a little disappointing. And then, you know, another thing you saw a lot of was the sniping back and forth about, you know, cheering against other countries or specifically Canada. It was just kind of amateurish and people on both sides came across poorly, I thought.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That wasn't a particularly bright moment of the tournament.
Yeah.
And you know, I think you could say the same thing when you looked at Canada's roster. I mean, there wasn't really anybody out there that
I agree.
On their team that I didn't, you know, they didn't have any of those high-end guys, you know, the Taylor Halls or anybody like that, that really got you excited or that you looked at as, you know, guys who could take over.
Oh, and I was just going to say, I think just all around, like looking back at the roster of the 04 team that won for the U.S., like there are just a lot of like good to solid players that, you know, I think were, they weren't in it necessarily for glory. I mean, Montoya was, you know, had a pretty good tournament back then. But, you know, you look at, you know, James Wisniewski and David Booth, Dan Fritchie, Ryan Kessler, like Parise. These are guys who, like, they weren't concerned with the individual glory or anything like that. You know, they're guys who are all really solid, really talented, you know, solid NHL players. But I don't know. There was maybe like more interest in, maybe there was like rah-rah USA, you know, but it was like, I don't know, more like patriotic pride than, I don't know.
I think there were some more character types of guys.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And I think there was more, I don't know if it was necessarily patriotic pride or just pride in, they were hockey players. They had pride in doing their job. And whether their job was, you know, to me, David Booth is a perfect example of the kind of player the U.S. needs to have in this tournament every year. You know, certainly, obviously he's a talented player, 30, 40 goal scorer for Florida a few years ago. But, you know, you go back to that tournament and he was the third line forward checking the other team's top line. not concerned about the points. And certainly they had that, you know, you mentioned the Kesslers and, you know, Zach Parise and guys like that. They had the high end talent for sure. You know, the all-stars and the guys that would go on to become award winners in the NHL. But you had guys like Booth who would, you know, were willing to play that lesser role. And I think that when you look at the teams that have been successful for the U.S., it's the guys that are talented like Booth, but are willing to play that role for that team.
Right. Right.
And I think you need some
big talent guys. You know, you need a Danny Crystal, but you also need, you know, if you look at like the last year's Olympic team for the United States, you know, Ryan Callahan's the most important guy on that roster. Is he the most skilled guy? Is he the most talented guy? No way. But you need some integrity in that lineup. And I don't.
He's probably a guy who a lot of people are like, who? What?
Yeah. Yeah. He's the second name on the sheet. If I'm picking that team, it's Ryan Miller, one, Ryan Callahan, two. And I said as much last year on podcast, but.
And Ryan Kesler, three.
Yeah, exactly. So, and how do you legislate that by the year that these kids were born? You know, maybe it's just a matter of timing where the kids who were the birth year that's playing in that old 04 World Junior, and you get that right mix, and then this year maybe it's just not there for whatever reason. So, and then you wonder about selection too.
Well, I think it's fair to say that, you know, I think there were some serious doubts. I don't know about the character aspect of it, or you know what these guys were like in the locker room, but. You know, some of the guys on this team aren't, you know, didn't come into this tournament under the best of circumstances. You know, right. Charlie Coyle dumps out on BU, and you know, a week or so before, actually, it was basically the day he showed up in Canada, or right. the day before,
or for training, yeah. Pre-training.
JT Miller obviously ditched North Dakota in August or whatever it was for Major Junior. You know, Merrill, obviously, we know his story.
I heard a lot too about Seth Jones being injured and, you know, just leaving such a hole on defense, on that team, and that having a huge effect on them, especially in those tight games that they wound up losing.
You know, do you think they're, and I know the development program was around prior to 04, but do you think the emergence of that, and there's been a lot of back padding about, you know, oh, this is this great program, it's turning out people, it's good for American hockey, that maybe there is, I don't know, like an ego problem with these players that are, I mean, obviously hockey players, elite hockey players are always going to be put up on a pedestal, whether they play for Honey Baked or the elite high schools in Minnesota or prep schools out east. You know, is this giving players a sense of entitlement or something that wasn't there before?
I want to hear your take on this. I have an opinion, but I'll save it for a little bit.
I think, and again, I don't want to say too much too strongly, because I'm not really in touch with how that whole thing works, but from an outside perspective, and again, this is just my how I stand outside the fishbowl looking in. To me, my biggest concern with the development program is there seems to be a barrier to entry. You know, you've got the 30 kids or so that are going to be your under 17s, and you've got the 25 kids or so that are going to be your under 18s. And how fluid is that? How permeable is that membrane for a kid who comes from, you know, small town Minnesota or a non-traditional market, you know, Metro Dallas, and all of a sudden he's like, okay, now I've got two choices. And I'm not going to be invited to the Ann Arbor program, so I guess I'll go play USHL. Or, you know, in another case, I'll go play CHL if I'm scouted and found out that way. One of the things that we mentioned earlier about the camaraderie and stuff is, you know, these under 18 teams have had such success in the IIHF events, keeping a lot of those players together. And I think that was the key when a lot of those teams with, you know, one of those great generations with the Eric Johnsons and Jack Johnsons and, you know, players of that age group a few years back, keeping them together is one thing. And if you have success and you can bring, you know, 15 of the 20 guys who won the world at under 18s, you know, maybe you've got a leg up going into that tournament, but I just don't know when you start to mix and match those things. That's kind of where I stand, and it's one of my concerns. And it may, as I said, it may be totally out of line, but that's just something I see.
I think when it comes down to picking this team, and I you know, we're probably ended up poring over this topic way more than we ever expected. But I think, and again, this is an outsider's perspective, but I think there's got to be a little bit of a lean toward a kid who went through the Ann Arbor program as opposed to a kid that.
Well, you're more familiar.
Yeah.
You pick what you know, you know.
But I don't know that. I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing.
I mean, and this is, you know, this may sound harsher than it's intended to be, but. And I can't recall the name right now, but Team Blaze took a Nebraska Omaha kid on this team. Josh Archibald, was that it?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I didn't see him make a tremendously negative impact, nor a tremendously positive impact in the USA games that I watched. You know, he's got 11 points in 20 games at Omaha, but I think that element of familiarity maybe gives him an edge over a Brian Ferlin from Cornell, who is certainly one of the most exciting freshmen, or a Kenny Agostino from Yale, you know, two guys who I'm more familiar with, that when it gets to be that close, you know, that's what you end up with. So, and Andy Isles was the emergency goaltender. I joked with someone that said, is giving up 5 goals to Finland an emergency? Obviously, that's an exaggeration, but you know, I mean, that's the thing, and there's a long way to go.
So. Yeah, I think there was some.
And I think when, you know what, when you're playing for 9th place or 7th place, whatever it ended up being, you know, there's going to cause, in a positive that comes out of that, is going to cause people to look at things a little differently and consider, you know, what happened, what went wrong, what went right. The second question of which will have a much shorter answer than the first, but you know, that is a positive in the long run.
We'll let's put the bow on that then.
Yeah. Too bad. We'll talk to you next year. Talk to you in late December 2012 when it gets going again.
Assuming the Mayans don't blow up the world.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, those Mayans, those pesky Mayans.
Yes.
What's the
careful? Word? Careful! Careful! We're gonna alienate our Mayan listening audience.
When are we scheduled to meet?
Just watch what you say. We like Mayans.
Are they on the agenda for what? Is it October or something?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, whatever. All right. Anybody? Anybody else? Deterioration?
Your Islanders.
My Islanders. Last time we met, I was pumping the tires of Matt Molson, who scored his 20th goal of the season last night, by the way.
And as a... I guess in terms of, you know, equal time, you should also mention that the player you discovered, Dustin Penner, hurt himself eating pancakes last week.
My kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I discovered him at the Waffle House.
Yeah, I guess so.
Denny's.
Do you have any in-progress scores you'd like to read?
No, all the games are over tonight.
Yeah.
I have a shout-out I have to announce.
Okay, shouts out.
I want to say congratulations to a good friend of Inch and a great friend of college hockey, Patty Bjorklund, who for about 30 years has been the Gopher hockey secretary, and I think she goes all the way back to Herb Brooks. I know she goes back to Buto and then Doug Woog and then obviously Don Lucia. But Patty's last day on the job in the Gopher hockey office was today. So congrats to her on her retirement, and it'll be different calling up the office and having someone else say Gopher hockey when they answer the phone.
Congrats, Patty. Enjoy retirement.
And John Barkin was a good friend of hers, and he would always call the office, and when she answered Gopher hockey, he would go, "Sucks!"
That's a nice play. How about... this isn't the time or place. I'm not going to do it.
What? Come on, go.
Wait, there's something that the Inch podcast is not the time and place for?
Can we get a teaser and then cover it in the next podcast?
No, because the ice is too big. The Zamboni won't be off the ice by then.
Got it.
Mariucci, come on, guys. I mean, this isn't, you've heard this song before, but I was watching that game against Notre Dame, and it's like, here's the problem. It's hard to tell how good teams are on that ice because the plays on that rink are so different than real hockey. I mean, a guy comes over the blue line, carries the puck for 10 strides, and isn't even close to a scoring area. Or you shoot a foot wide and it kicks off and it's in no man's land on the half wall, and it just, I don't know. I struggle with it.
There's a lot of room there.
It's a me thing and not a them thing. I understand, but I have a podcast and they don't. So there you go. I don't know. Am I way off there? Anybody else?
I hear what you're saying. It just doesn't bother me that much.
I don't know that I'm bothered by it.
I have to reset. I don't get why Mariucci draws the ire, though, because, there are several Olympic-size ice sheets in this league and elsewhere.
Maybe that's why we can't tell that Northern Michigan's good or not.
Yeah, your Huskies play on the same size ice sheet.
I don't know. Maybe it's TV angles and cameras and stuff, but just even watching games at CC or St. Cloud, on the tube, it's just like it's not the same.
I mean, the place looks big. I'll give you that. I mean, and it might be an optical illusion or whatever. I've probably said this before, but if you stand in the top row,
this is my favorite evaluation of this place.
Go ahead. If you stand on the top row at the end, it looks as wide as it is long.
Yeah, it looks like a square. That was my favorite.
Yeah, it looks like a gigantic square ice.
It's a big rectangle with no corners.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just and granted, it might be a geographic thing and what you experience growing up and what you're exposed to most frequently. But I don't know. Some of those plays, it's just, I don't know. Like, you need a line change if you make a D-to-D pass.
But if you stand on the home bench, you can't see the visitor's bench because it's the ice is crowned like a football field.
Yeah. It's like you're driving down the highway on a hot day and you see like those steam mirages. The bench kind of comes and goes as you look.
Oasis. You see a goal like at the blue line. Yeah. So. I mean, you know something's up when you get like 2 2-on-1s during the 5-minute penalty kill.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And it's like you were saying when we were talking about that game against Notre Dame, you hit the post and then there's no rebound because it's just gone. Like, everything is just, it just evaporates. There's so much room that nobody's really ever, kind of in the mix. I don't know. But.
Or the other problem, or you get the reverse problem where the goalie makes a save and you think you're steering it sort of behind you, kind of like Ryan Miller does, where
Yeah.
You're kind of steering it into the corner. Well, you're steering it toward the corner. Unfortunately, there's 30 more feet there.
Right.
And, you know, the guy comes back and makes a play.
Right.
So, I can't watch television games from Colorado College. I mean, it's like those
because
things
they're not on TV.
What's that?
Because they're not on.
No, when they are on, because that press box is...
Oh, it's very...
It's like they're shooting from the International down. Space Station.
They use the Skycam, I think, exclusively there.
You know, that would be a great element for hockey. A center-hanging scoreboard would make that a lot tougher. But if you ran those cross wires across a hockey rink...
Oh, yeah.
That camera would be unbelievable. And I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet. I think we might at an NHL All-Star game or something, if they've got their stuff together.
It would be just like a video game.
Well, maybe the Winter Classic is the place to try it.
Ah, there you go.
Well, that would make tons of sense, yeah. I mean, it's not like you're ever in danger of the thing being in play vertically. I mean, if you flip the puck out of the zone and it hits it, that's your only time it's in danger. It's not like you're throwing a football around. Or punting football.
Or it falls from the sky and hits a player. Like in the... I don't know. One of that horrible
one
bowl
of
game.
Bowl games.
The one Iowa of them guy, fell down?
Yeah, an Iowa guy got hit.
Oh, I didn't
by
see that. I didn't.
Yeah. Got all tangled up in the wire and everything, too, I think.
That's good.
Knowing I'm Iowa, it was probably a running back, too.
Yeah.
11 wins, boys. 11 wins. College football.
Oh, teams with 11 wins are good?
I don't know. I know one that's not. Sorry.
I kind of... I
wondered if I could catch you. I wondered if I could catch you napping there.
No.
I was... You know, By the time the last week here rolled around with the Rose Bowl and whatnot, I was out.
You cashed in your chips. You went to the cage and cashed in your chips. And
yeah.
Hit the super buffet.
And I didn't watch any. I watched some of the Rose Bowl. I did not, but like the Fiesta and the Sugar and the BCS.
Did you watch the game Monday night?
No.
You were doing for a shift.
I was watching American Pickers.
Good.
And Pawn Stars.
Good deal.
So, I tried to watch it. Actually, we got a new TV after Thanksgiving, and it's the 3D TV.
Oh yeah.
So I tried to watch the national championship game was on in 3D.
Right.
And sure was thrilling to watch two teams that can't score in my living room.
Yeah.
So I gave up after about two drives for each team. Shouldn't say I didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't miss much.
I was just like, you know, I saw this movie.
Right.
So.
Well, it's almost baseball.
Yeah.
Kevin, this is the year for the Indians?
Sure.
Hope springs eternal, babe.
At least until June comes around again.
There you go. Yeah, they had a good start last year.
And then June hit, yes.
Yeah.
Hope may spring eternal until you look at the Twins roster.
Nope.
They're nope.com right now.
Twins. Yeah, they're terrible.
Hey, they could be wearing Miami Marlins uniforms.
Your Marlins.
I guess they kind of are my Marlins.
They
now,
are.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of a sake of geography, yes.
My Panthers?
Mm.
Oh, wow. Your Dolphins, Chad Henne.
Yeah.
Aren't the Expos still the local team where you live? Or do they not play there anymore?
Yeah.
Let's see. The only local team they have down here, they've got the West Indies Cricket and the U.S. Virgin Islands soccer team that promptly went out and lost all six of their World Cup qualifying games after they got to the furthest round they'd ever gotten by an average score of like 6 or 7 to 1.
Well, at least they scored.
That makes no sense to me that a U.S. territory has its own team.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense to me either. Especially why doesn't
like California have its own World Cup team then? That doesn't. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
You ever seen Tim Duncan down there?
I have not yet. Apparently, he comes by once in a while.
And, does he really?
He does good. Yeah, not. I guess not too frequently, but there was the high school, Central High School on St. Croix. Needed a new basketball floor, and apparently he provided that for them. And when you get to the airport at St. Croix, the first thing you see when you're driving out of the parking lot is one, the signs that say drive left, and then the picture of Tim Duncan, and then various other Tim Duncan artwork around the around town. But I'm over on St. Thomas now.
Jess, back to your thing on the California having their own team or whatever. That's actually causing a problem this year with the Olympics being in London, because typically with international soccer, Great Britain's split up into their four groups. And So they have a real hard time figuring out, do they have an all English team, or do they bring in players from Wales or
Scotland? Yeah.
So it's actually causing a bit of a headache with at least the World Cup soccer or the Olympic soccer tournament for this year. So,
yeah,
well, you know, there was just recently a women's international tournament someplace, and I saw, you know, I get an email from USA Hockey saying USA beats Canada West 6-2. It's like, well, okay, so our entire country beat half of their country? That's impressive.
Yeah, they run a lot of those underage showcase tournaments the same way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that you said.
Canada, Ontario.
Yeah.
Newcastle United Soccer. Bang.
I don't. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Good riddance to Manchester City in the FA Cup.
That was a crazy draw. I didn't realize that until Saturday, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. So.
By the way, my Panthers are in first place, and I didn't even know it until I looked at the standings.
Your Panthers. It's like my UConn Huskies basketball. I love it.
So wait, what's the story with Manchester City? All I know is they're in first place.
They're good. They got an owner with a lot of money and got a lot of good players.
They've traditionally not been good.
Right.
And they got a owner from the Middle East, as Gladys said, pumped in a boatload of cash, and all of a sudden it's sort of now the think of it as Yankees Mets, but being in the same league, and all of a sudden, hey, like the Mets are actually competing.
Whereas the Yankees would be Manchester United in that analogy. Two towns. There's two teams in the same town. They were both drawn against each other in the early rounds of the knockout tournament known as the FA Cup. So
it would be like... So maybe a better analogy would be Lakers-Clippers.
Yes. That would be the way to put it.
There you go. Yeah. And now
although I think it's got a little bit of Yankees Red Sox, even though Yankees Red Sox aren't in the same town, but City was bad and hard luck team for such a long time, and then they spent a bunch of money and all of a sudden they were a contender.
Yes. So
There's your English or Barclays Premier League section of the Inch podcast.
Is Stoke going to make the... They're not going to get sent down, are they?
No, Stoke is looking pretty safe. They're in the middle right now.
I root for Stoke. Just because I like to say Stoke.
It's perfectly reasonable.
Couldn't tell you one guy who played for him. Stoke Stokerton. Does he play for them still?
I think he's injured right now.
God damn it. He's always on the IR.
He's a little knock, as they say.
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah, Stoke City are right up there. 29 points. Currently ninth of 20. They're well clear of the drop zone, as they call it.
Better watch out. They might be knocking on the Toons door pretty soon, Gladdy.
Not if we keep drilling Man U 3-0 every week. Bang.
That's true. No argument there.
What was what team was the guy that scored the goal, the goalie that scored the goal?
The team is Everton. The goalie is Tim Howard.
Well, I knew the goalie was Tim Howard. He's
American.
A who did he score on?
Was it Rangers?
Adam
Blackburn?
Rovers.
He scored on Joe Blackburn?
Yes.
Wow.
Josh Blackburn. Joe Blackburn.
Josh Blackburn. Apparently.
I think it was Blackburn. And they are awful.
And then they are 20th, but they came back to win that game. Everton lost the game that Tim Howard scored in.
That's terrible.
Or no, was it Bolton? No, it was Bolton, wasn't it? Yeah, because it was... Yeah. Bolton. Yeah.
City's Bolton. Goal differential is 40.
Yeah,
that's
insane.
That's pretty ridiculous. In 20.
Yeah, you're going to have to win that that league title outright. You're not going to beat them in goal differential. They're, what, 10 or 12, something like that, better than...
11 over Man U, and then another 11 to Spurs.
Yeah.
40-29-18. Okay, nobody cares at all about this. And the people who do care will send us long emails because they're very passionate about this.
It fascinates me. I just don't understand any of it.
Yeah. Last I had seen, my Rams were on a 5-game winning streak. January, time to talk about my Rams.
Rosso?
Yeah.
Not the ones that'll have Jeff Fisher as a coach next year?
That's really going to have a tough pull. Oh, we lost to... oh, no, we didn't. That's last year. Never mind.
You have to look it up on followthepuck.com.
I got it here. Rosso Hockey Online. They had changed their website URL.
Oh.
They've got game with another team from Roseau County coming up pretty soon, I think.
Usually this is about the time of the year we go over and beat those Warriors.
Squatters?
Yeah.
Squatters. Okay.
Youth teams. I don't want youth teams. I want high school varsity. Rams hockey. Ram boys.
They're 7-3-1, Gladdy.
And they didn't start out too well, so we're putting it on. Putting it on here pretty good.
Oh, they haven't... Do they only play War Road? Oh, they do play them twice.
That game's tomorrow, Jess.
Wow.
Thursday night, January 12th. At the Roseau Civic Arena.
What's the spread?
Where you are, that game's today.
Roseau Memorial Arena, yeah. Previous game Saturday, 8-1 over St. Cloud Tech. So,
Grand Rapids beat Roseau and War Road.
Well, Grand Rapids is nasty at hockey. But, yeah, 7:30 Thursday night. Another glory for the Rams.
You going?
Not going to make it.
You should go one of these times.
I would love to. I would absolutely love to. friend Eric Martinson, Inch podcast listener. We got to hook that up. We'll do it.
You and Big Buff.
Oh. Me and Stats on Crack, Eric Martinson.
You and Big Buff can do some
boating. My Rams. Jess, do you want to give a shout-out?
Yeah, a member of our Inch family, Larry Radloff, our photographer at the Frozen Four and at many other huge events for years now. I went to college with Larry. Larry has always been a big guy, you know, just one of those big guys. Larry ran a marathon on over the weekend outside Orlando.
Sunday.
And, I'm still wrapping my head around that, but wow, and what an accomplishment, and good for him.
And there's more to the story. He ran a half marathon on Saturday.
Wow.
And a full marathon on Sunday. He did 39.9 miles. It's his fourth or fifth marathon, or at least half. I know he's done them in Nashville and Vegas as well.
Yeah, I think he's done half marathons before, but I think this is his first full marathon. I'm not sure, but I'm just super impressed. I mean, anybody who can do that, let alone when you're starting from you know, Larry, who was, like I say, always been kind of a bigger guy, and he's lost a ton of weight and has gotten in great shape, and good for him.
Oh yeah, and shout out to Larry just for being Larry. He's the best.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean,
it's like congratulations, Dale Murphy. People are like, what are you congratulating?
Larry Radloff and Dale Murphy should start a Hall of Fame.
They're in my Hall of Fame.
Larry's always been the Dale Murphy of Inch.
No, except Dale Murphy wouldn't bring us beer.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah.
And Larry doesn't wear Matt.
Maybe you're the Dale Murphy of Inch, Jess.
I bought you Grain Belt Premium that time. You still haven't thanked me.
Maybe it's better that you don't. All right. With that, let's put a bow tie on this Inch podcast. For Kevin Zeese, James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, and Mike Idlebus, this is Joe Glashewski. Thank you for listening to the Inch podcast.